자존심을 높여오신 분께 바칩니다.
당신은 지구 상류층.
굿 애프터눈 에브리바디 웰컴 백 투 더 솔 인터내셔널 젠 센터 앳 화게사. We're going to continue with second talks on the Diamond Sutra. We did last week five chapters, and a very great monk, maybe a lot of you have heard of him, Thich Nhat Hanh Tsenim. He said, after you have read the first five chapters of the Diamond Sutra, read them again. So we're going to go quickly through the first five chapters because that's the heart of the Diamond Sutra. Everything else is just a kind of a review. So, first chapter. Thus have I heard. Upon a time, Buddha sojourned in Anapandika's park by Shravasti with a great company of bhikshus, even 1,250. Time for breaking the fast, the world-honored one, enrobed and carrying his bowl, made his way into the great city of Shravasti to beg for his food. In the midst of the city, he begged from door to door according to rule. This done, he returned to his retreat and took his meal. When he had finished, he put away his robe and begging bowl, washed his feet, arranged his seat, and sat down. Diamond Sutra is finished. Completely done. The Buddha has shown everyday life, moment-to-moment mind, following his situation. That's it. Actually, the whole Diamond Sutra comes out of that one act. The Buddha does his everyday life without any thinking, without any trace, without any checking himself, or checking the situation, or checking anything around him. He just does it. And then the monks see that and are impressed, and they say, how can we do that? Subodhi especially. Now in the midst of the assembly was the venerable Sabuti. Forthwith he arose, uncovered his right shoulder, knelt upon his right knee, and respectfully raising his hands with palms joined, addressed the Buddha thus, world-honored one, it is most precious how mindful the Tathagata is of all the bodhisattvas, protecting and instructing them so well. World-honored one, if good men and good women seek the consummation of incomparable enlightenment, by what criteria should they abide, and how should they control their thoughts? The Buddha said, very good, Sabuti. Just as you say, the Tathagata is ever mindful of the bodhisattvas, protecting and instructing them well. Now listen and take my words to heart. I will declare to you by what criteria good men and good women seeking the consummation of incomparable enlightenment, that's Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, should abide and how they should control their thoughts. Said Sabuti, pray do, world-honored one, with joyful anticipation we long to hear. So, first chapter, they saw him living his everyday life, but they didn't get it. How do we do that? How do we do that every day in the car, in the office, on the street? How do we keep that mind? That's what this chapter is asking. He's saying, how should we act like you just acted? That's all it is. Not difficult. Chapter 3. The Buddha said, Sabuti, all the bodhisattva heroes should discipline their thoughts as follows. All living creatures of whatever class, born from eggs, from wombs, from moisture, or by transformation, whether with form or without form, whether in a state of thinking or exempt from thought necessity, or wholly beyond all thought realms, all these are caused by me to attain unbounded liberation, nirvana. Yet when vast, uncountable, immeasurable numbers of beings have thus been liberated, verily, no being has been liberated. No sentient being has been liberated. Why is this, Sabuti? It is because no bodhisattva, who is a real bodhisattva, cherishes the idea of an ego entity, a personality, a being, or a separated individuality. So very interesting. Sabudi is like this Sosongbulgyo. He's like this Hinayana type. How should we control our minds? How should we control our thoughts? How should good men and good women, he's still in the realm of us guys, how should we practice so that we get enlightenment? Still this kind of Hinayana mind. And the Buddha is very interesting. Very softly, he hits him. He hits Subodhi. And he says, all bodhisattvas should discipline their thoughts as follows. Not just us, all living beings. So the Buddha already hits Subodhi. Says, not just this narrow view about you and your fellow monks and nuns, how should you guys practice? Rather, how save all beings? How should you cause all beings to get enlightenment? And actually, when you cause them to get enlightenment, actually, no being has been gotten enlightenment. That's because when you get enlightenment, you return to your original nature. So there's no liberation. You're already liberated. Everyone is already complete. Everyone is already perfect. Our original nature cannot be liberated. Actually, it's already liberated. That's like, how do we make this space more space-like? This space is not space enough. How do we add more space to this space? That's like saying, how do we save sentient beings? Liberating sentient beings is like saying making space more empty. You can't make this space more empty. It's empty. There's nothing more empty than empty. So when you say to liberate sentient beings, that's a mistake, actually. But we have to talk. So we say sentient beings are numberless. We vow to save them all. Sentient beings are numberless, we vow to save them all. But it's a mistake. It's a mistake. So, all he's talking about is the great bodhisattva way. All beings return to their nature. So, we can say like water. Liberating sentient beings, it's like water. Pure water. Pure water, then many dirty things go in, Many, you know, garbage and dust and soot, maybe some cinder goes in, hand goes in, and bad things goes in, and some hairs go in. And the water's very dirty. We say the water's dirty. Then the water's dirty. But even though you say the water's dirty, it's still the same. The H2O is not dirty or clean. Yeah, this drinking water, to your thinking, is dirty. But give it to a cat. Cat can drink it. That's all it's saying with this. So, verily no being has been liberated. Very simple. So, our practice is not going from A to B. It's not going from here to there. You don't go somewhere in your practice. Already, you are arrived. But you just don't know it. That's all. So, when you realize that you didn't go anywhere, you're already there. You realize that being here is it. That's all. That's the third chapter. Not difficult yet, yeah? Very simple. Furthermore, Subhuti, in the practice of charity, a bodhisattva should be detached. That is to say, he should practice charity without regard to appearances, without regard to sound, odor, touch, flavor, or any quality. Subhuti, thus should the bodhisattva practice charity without attachment. Wherefore, in such a case, his merit is incalculable. Subhuti, what do you think? Can you measure all the space extending eastward? No, world-honored one, I cannot. Then can you, Subhuti, measure all space extending southward, westward, northward, or in any other direction, including nadir and zenith? No, world-honored one, I cannot. Well, Subhuti, equally incalculable, equally immeasurable, is the merit of the bodhisattva who practices charity without any attachment to appearances. Subhuti, bodhisattvas should persevere one-pointedly in this instruction. Point is, charity is empty. charity is empty. Any kind of charity, any kind of boshi, we said last, any kind of giving is empty. So the merit that you get is also empty. But we expect some approval, some reward, some good feeling, some liberty, some relief when we give something. And actually, most people are disappointed when they give something and they feel they didn't get something back. Right? So he's saying the giving is empty. True giving means the giving is empty. Chapter 5. Subhuti, what do you think? Is the Tathagata to be recognized by some material characteristic? That time people expected the Buddha to look like something. Or if you were a real Buddha or a real saint, you look like something. Same thing in Christianity. If you were a saint, maybe you have this, you know, behind your head, you have the, your head, so they're checking people. You have this, does it look like that? But Buddhism really hits that idea that the Buddha looks like something. It hits that idea. That's why we have all these Buddhas here. Many Buddhas, many hundreds of Buddhas. Buddhism means even the Buddha image, that's not true Buddha. So we use hundreds of Buddha. They all look the same. That means, you know, in most religions, one God. One God. But in Buddhism, we use thousands of Buddhas. That means there's nothing that's not Buddha. Everything is Buddha. Millions of Buddhas. Billions of Buddhas. Trillions of Buddhas. If there's trillions and trillions of Buddhas, what's not Buddha? So, it's like Buddhism takes this idea of one Buddha. One. You know, we're Bul-i-sa-san. Because if you have one God, you must have one an enemy. If you have one good, you have to have its opposite. But if you have millions of Buddhas all over the place, there's nothing that's not Buddha. Everything is Buddha. That's Buddhi, not two. So, Subhuti, what do you think? Is the Tathagata to be recognized by some material characteristic? Is the Tathagata some material characteristic? I once heard some, once when I came to Korea, when I was a very young monk, one Korean monk said to me, "Oh, Western people cannot really get enlightenment completely like Asian people." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "You should look at Buddha statue. Buddha statue's eyes are like this. Western people's eyes are like this. So you cannot become enlightened like a real Buddha. You close, but not completely." I said, "Oh, thank you for your teaching." So that's a mistake. Buddha is not some form of a Buddha. Buddha is the sound of a bird. Hearing that fan. Smelling the summer air. Feeling the sweat between your feet. That, the thing that does that, that's Buddha. The thing that hears that child's voice outside, the something that hears that, that feels, that smells, that the something, it has no form, that's Buddha. It's not a form, it's not a shape, so that's what that's pointing to. So what's difficult about the Diamond Sutra so far? So the Diamond Sutra completely hits that idea. It hits the idea that Buddha is, that kind of thing. That's why they have, some religions have these statues, and when the statue is crying, maybe they have this in Cholado, I don't know. The statue is crying. We must go there. That's a true mother of something. Buddhism hits that. Okay? Very simple. So, very interesting point. Chapter 6. Rare is true faith. Subhuti said to Buddha, "World honored one, will there always be men who truly believe after coming to hear these teachings?" Buddha answered, Sabuti, do not utter such words. Do not say such a thing. At the end of the last 500-year period, following the passing of the Tathagata, there will be self-controlled men, rooted in merit, coming to hear these teachings, who will be inspired with belief. But you should realize that such men have not strengthened their root of merit under just one Buddha, or two Buddhas, or three, or four, or five Buddhas, but under countless Buddhas. And their merit is of every kind. Such men, coming to hear these teachings, will have an immediate uprising of pure faith. Sabuti, and the Tathagata will recognize them. Yes, he will clearly perceive that all these of pure heart and the magnitude of their moral excellences. Wherefore? It is because such men will not fall back to cherishing the idea of an ego entity, a personality, a being, or a separated individuality. They will neither fall back to cherishing the idea of things as having intrinsic qualities, nor even things as devoid of intrinsic qualities. Wherefore, because if such men allowed their minds to grasp and hold onto anything, they would be cherishing the idea of an ego entity, a personality, a being, or a separated individuality. And if they grasped and held on to the notion of things as having intrinsic qualities, they would be cherishing the idea of an ego entity, a personality, a being, or a separated individuality. Likewise, if they grasped and held on to the notion of things as devoid of intrinsic qualities, they would be cherishing the idea of an ego entity, a personality, a being, or a separated individuality. So, you should not be attached to things as being possessed of or devoid of intrinsic qualities. This is the reason why the Tathagata always teaches this saying, my teaching of the good law is to be likened unto a raft. The Buddha teaching must be discarded, relinquished. How much more so misteaching? So, actually, until chapter 5, all of the Buddha's spoken teaching is done. He's done speaking, actually. But Sabuti doesn't seem to get it. There's a very interesting thing happening here. It's a relationship between a teacher and his student. It's a very beautiful teaching. It's a very beautiful relationship. It's a very beautiful exchange. Buddha is trying to teach. Sabuti sometimes gets it, but really doesn't. So he asks him again, teacher, I kind of get it, but will other people get it later? Will other people understand this? At the end of the period of the Dharma? So people often wonder, this Malbop, this Dharma-ending age, we talk about the Dharma-ending age. In every culture, in China, in India, and in every culture, we know that things pass through a period of enthusiasm, great effort, then kind of going down, and then passing into disinterest, yeah? Any one of you who is married knows what I mean. In the beginning, some great attraction, vast interest, then love, then maybe you make the mistake, you get married, then there's a kind of going along, then tolerating, then kind of fighting, and then nowadays, maybe something else, very quickly, go to court. So, people believed that spirituality was also, that there were periods of spirituality, that there would be great interest in the Dharma, obviously when the Buddha is there. People are looking at us, the Western people now in Korea. Oh, Sungsan Sim was here, they were very interested in the Dharma, now maybe they're not so interested, maybe soon they will be not interested in Korea, then maybe everyone will leave and grow their hair and become office workers. Everyone is kind of expecting this. I hear they're taking bets, 5-to-1 odds. So everyone expects that. This is not unusual. People in the Buddhist time thought that after 1,000 years, there will be less interest in practicing meditation. So Subuddhi asks, will people have faith? Will they understand your teaching now, then? That means it's difficult for me, Subuddhi. That means he's admitting even he doesn't completely understand it. It's like someone who just gets married and says, honey, will you love me in 20 years? You know, marriage, you know, he's with the Buddha. It's the best time. It's like day one of the marriage. You know, the greatest time was when you're with your teacher. I mean, imagine when you're with the Buddha. And on day one of his understanding, Subuddhi says, yes, but Buddha, will you love me in 20 years? That means he has doubt. Right? If some lover says that to their heart, that means a little bit they doubt. If Subuddhi completely understood this, if there was no doubt about his insight, he wouldn't ask this. But he's a little bit, he gets it intellectually, but he's holding back. Very interesting. So, the Buddha is very clear with him. The Buddha, bang, hits him. He says, Subuddhi, don't ask me such a stupid question. Don't ask such a stupid thing. That reveals your doubt. But anyway, he goes on and he talks. And he turns it into a good thing. Just like our teachers, and Master Sung San, if someone asked a stupid question or a good question, bang, he would hit them. Very strong. Bang! But then he would answer the question. Same thing with the Buddha says, faith, this issue of faith, this issue of faith in the Dharma doesn't just happen by accident. Faith in the Dharma doesn't happen by accident. It has roots. It's like when you pull an apple off of a tree, you don't pull an apple off and you say, ah, this just appeared today. You know, this happened because of a long process. So, also, if you have faith in the Buddha, if you have faith in this teaching, it means it came about because of a long faith under many teachers, under many Buddhas. I remember when I first encountered Buddhist teaching. The first time I ever saw a Buddha, a picture of the Buddha, I was still very, I think it was high school, and it was just a short image, but someone had a picture of a Buddha in their room. There's another thing that I did in Germany that I saw, but I saw this picture and I walked past it and I went, and I looked at it again, and something grabbed me. Something really grabbed me. Something interested me. This person just sitting there with legs crossed, just... And it really went deeply in my mind. But I was only in high school and I was interested in rock and roll and having a good time and of course study. When, how do I get into good college and how do I get this and how many friends do I have and which friends like me and which friends don't like me and how many friends do I have and how many friends do I have and do I have enough friends and are my friends cool enough? Do I have the cool friends? So that's karma. So all this seed went inside. Something I recognized, and then saw this, and really it went inside, but something is pulled, then back into my karma. But something, it was recognizing some kind of something familiar. So then after that, then I went to, it's in this book, I went to Germany and I visited someone and they invited me over for tea in Freiburg. And I went into their room, and they had this big picture of a Buddha. Big picture. And before we sat down, they took some incense and they light it. You know, I'm ready to, I'm ready to talk, or let's hear some music or something. But still, I'm looking at this picture. But my habit mind is just happening. It's just flowing. And this guy, then he did three bows, and then, you know, smile. And then something went deeper. Later, I found out that this picture was Sokaram, the Sokaram Buddha. It was big. I think he got it from some, like, Misuljanshi or something. It's big. But it really went inside. When I saw that, it was like a very deep, deep, deep recognition. It was a recognition. It was a recognition. It was like seeing an old picture of a relative, of someone you knew before. And when you saw it, you didn't know exactly who it is, but you recognized something. Something old. Something ancient. Something deeply, deeply, deeply familiar. So, the Buddha talks about that here in the Diamond Sutra. There will be self-controlled men, rooted in merit, coming to hear these teachings, who will be inspired with belief. But you should realize that such people have not strengthened their root of merit under just one Buddha. Because of just, it means not under just one book. They didn't have some karma with Buddhism because of just one Dharma talk that they heard. Maybe because they accidentally turned on Bulgo television for 10 minutes. Then they liked Buddhism. It doesn't happen that way, the Buddha said. I mean, also when you meet someone that you have close karma with. It's not one time that you met them. It's very deep, 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 deep. Deep, deep meeting. Just like the apple you eat didn't come today. It comes from a long, 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 long process. Made this apple that you put in your mouth. It's not just something that came together right now, although you're experiencing it right now, it's part of a long, 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 long process. So the Buddha is saying you should see your Buddhist faith like that. Very simple. So, did not strengthen their root of merit under just one Buddha, or two Buddhas, or three, or four, or five, but under countless Buddhas. And their merit is of every kind. Such men coming to hear these teachings will have an immediate uprising of pure faith. Immediate uprising of pure faith. So I remember the first time I read the Diamond Sutra, it was kind of almost by accident. I wasn't planning to. I had the Diamond Sutra. I knew I should read the Diamond Sutra. And I liked the title, Diamond Sutra. That's kind of cool. You know, these rap guys, they all like diamonds. Everyone likes a diamond. So Diamond Sutra, that sounds pretty deep. So I got this Diamond Sutra book that sounds like the most high-class jewel you could have. And when I opened it up, I read it. I didn't understand it, but something really hit me. I knew it was talking different than everything else. It was pointing deeper than I ever realized. It was like nothing. It's not intellectual. It's almost anti-intellectual. So I realized, something. This is amazing. And each line I read, more it opened up, more it opened up, more it opened up. So that was not the first time I read the Diamond Sutra. Just like every time you hear Beethoven. The first time you heard it, da 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 da. Everyone hears that, and they're not just hearing music for the first time. It's a state. It's a condition. It's a question. that you have heard over and over and over again in your mind. So why Beethoven is great, not because he makes nice music, not that. It means he goes, and you feel, hey, I feel like that. I felt like that before I heard this. Now when I hear it, I know what that sounds like. That's me in his music. He drew the sound of my mind. Oh, that's amazing. How he did that. That's all. Same thing. So when Sugzansin said, who are you? Only done now. I went, yeah, I don't know. That wasn't the first time I only don't know. That wasn't the first time Mr. Lee or Kwan Heng Sunim or Bo Heng Sunim or Kwan Hyun Soo or Kim Kui Ja. That was not the first time these people only don't knowed. When they heard that, it went, oh yeah, that's right. I feel that. When my father died. I had that experience before. That's what the Buddha's talking about. So when you hear this teaching, your faith in this teaching didn't start right there. It's because before, you had that experience. Yeah, he says under countless Buddhas, but it doesn't mean these gold statue Buddhas. It means the Buddha of your own experience. That's all. So it's very interesting. So when Zen Master Sugzansin went, I talked about this last week. I don't know exactly what that is, but that's amazing. So I told you, when I was a young guy, I told this story once or twice before. Me and my friend, we were really bad guys. Still bad, very bad guys. But very bad that time. So we used to go into the store all the time, and I saw, you know, in the store they have the markets, these huge supermarkets like a football field, and there's the Muzak. We say music, but it's Muzak in the background. But nobody's listening to the, you know, everyone's shopping in the, you know, like this Costco or Mr. Kim's. Big store. There's music on very lightly, but nobody's listening. It's a little bit you hear, but it's not for listening. Then you ding, 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 ding. Then they say, buy kimchi, $1.99. Today only. Then ding, 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 ding. So my friends and I used to go into the store and we said, wow. Look at everybody. They're all asleep. So we used to walk around. I told this story. Yeah, you heard this story before? We used to walk around very bad. And we used to, people would be, you know, little babies, and they'd be picking out food. And, mommy, give me this, and fighting and stuff. And we would go, dip! And we would watch. And people would go, they didn't notice that someone just shouted. It was a big joke to us. We would be slapping. Nobody saw. Nobody heard that somebody screamed. That! And we would do it. And we would be standing there picking out stuff like, oh, this is... That! And we would look around. And other guys would be around. We'd be like five of us in the store, you know. You know, because also in the summertime, the store was air-conditioned. We would play baseball all day. And then everyone's sweating. And we'd go into the store and walk around and just, you know, bored. You know, suburbs, what are you going to do? And we would walk around. And we noticed that nobody heard us make that sound. And it was the funniest thing in the world. It was the most subversive thing we can do. Until that point, it was like writing bad words. We would write like four-letter words places, you know, and then run away. Then watch people. You know, we would, you know, in the snow, you write it in their window. You in the snow on the car window. Then you run away and you watch. And the people go, oh, they would hide their children's eyes. That was funny for a few years. But then the new level, that was like the Hinayana level. You know, you make this impure thing. Then you watch people shocked. Then are like, really? I didn't realize it, but we did this thing. But nobody heard it. Try it sometime. Try it. Go into a parking lot or something. Haeundae. Beach. Very good, I'm sure. Just do it. Nobody will notice. They'll look over at you for a second, but then they'll go back to... If someone really heard it, they would go... But their thinking doesn't stop. So the first time I saw Zen Master Sun Tzu go like this, go... I went... That's something. I don't know exactly, but I've been there. That's what this means. So when he says under Buddhas, this, not one Buddha, two Buddhas, it means, Buddha means experience. So when someone says, who are you? Don't know. Keep that in mind. When you go, some people connect with that teaching. Some people don't. Some people, come on, not interesting. Maybe I tried this. No problem. Bye-bye. But some people hear that one word and they go, yeah, don't know. That's somehow interesting. I don't know. Very interesting. So that's what he's pointing to. That means you have karma with this teaching. And you've had long time karma with this teaching. And if you practice, you'll meet this teaching again. Very simple, okay? So it's not a very difficult thing. All right?